DAB Digital Radio, Digital TV, downloads and online.
Five Live.
So this is Five Live. Mark Kermode resumes his cricketing education, which began, of course, when we were at Durham for the first test match against Zimbabwe. And that was an event with Mike Gatting explaining some of the cricketing rules to you, which then, as a consequence, I think, baffled many experts.
Can I just say I'm passing very nimbly over the fact that you referred to me as a queen?
No, the Queen was here yesterday.
Mm-hmm. I met Helen Mirren, which is almost the same thing.
You might like to know the podcast has been around for a while, and many people partake of the joys therein. There is now, you should know, if you go to the Five Live website, you'll see details on this. There is a vodcast available. Now, this is of last week's little section of movies, but if you really want to see inside our studio with some excitement and chat and conversation around the new movies and new arrivals last week, if you go to the Five Live website, this is a video podcast.
A vodcast.
Or television, as it's referred to.
Yes. All the Only without on the there. Glitz.
And you can download it. It'll be there for about a week, and it's something that we're looking at and may well be available on a regular basis. The podcast continues. Hello to Jason Isaacs. So let's bring your box office top ten. We have some interesting new releases to come. We have coming up thoughts on Black Snake Moan, Conversations with Other Women, Love Wrecked, and Zodiac.
Zodiac. That's
taking
the biggie.
I know. That's what I was building up to it.
Oh, I see. Fine.
I was leaving it to
you
the end.
You peaked too early.
Number
Can I just explain this to any of the listeners that I'm talking into a sporting commentary microphone, which feels incredibly strange. It feels like I'll be going, you know, making the horse racing, but never mind, carry on.
That was really, really worth you saying.
Okay, fine.
Alpha Dogs at number 10.
Alpha Dog, unless you know that there's... You said Alpha Dogs.
No, I didn't.
You said Alpha Dogs
at number 10.
Oh, Alpha Dog is at number 10. Fine, okay. It's still not
You're
very good.
You're starting very petulant.
I am, yeah, I know, but I'm just miffed because you referred to me as a queen.
So, Alpha Dog, any good?
No, as I just said, it's not much good. It's not as good as the Larry Clark film that it's clearly derived from. It does have Justin Timberlake as a, you know, baggy-trousered teenager, and what a stretch that must have been.
Blades of Glory at number 9.
I laughed despite myself. I mean, you know, I've never found ice skating that enticing or indeed that funny, but here it is with Will Ferrell, and I did laugh pretty much all the way through.
This is England at number 8.
Sadly, this isn't actually number 1 in the charts. Maybe it would have been number 1 if the BBFC had given it a 15 certificate, as the Bristol Council have, of course, seen fit to do, but it's a great evocation of England in 1983, an extraordinary sort of rediscovery of skinhead culture, and, you know, very fine for people of my age who remember that period, but I would say also very good for people, you know, who aren't old enough to remember it, despite the 18 certificate, which obviously is a problem.
Fracture at 7.
Shall we do it together?
No, I have absolutely nothing to do with your ridiculous posturing.
Okay. Shall I not do it this week, just as a sort of special change?
People will be disappointed.
Sir Anthony Hopkins. At the beginning of the film, we see him killing his wife, and the rest of the film, somebody has to prove that he's done it, which, of course, him being Sir Anthony Hopkins is very hard to do because he's cleverer than everybody else.
Next at 6.
Yeah, next. I mean, just once again, a sort of a sci-fi movie about somebody that can see in the future, the gag being you may think you've seen this all before, and you have.
Mr. Bean's Holiday, still at number 5.
I mean, it's a sad indictment of our society that Mr. Bean's Holiday is number 5. Have you ever seen Monsieur Hulot's Holiday?
Many years ago.
Yeah. Did you find that funny?
Momentarily.
Well, believe me, in comparison with Mr. Bean's Holiday, that is young Frankenstein. That is, like, every single moment of Monsieur Hulot's Holiday is like the bit in Young Frankenstein when he says, can you give me a hand with the bags? Sure, you take the blonde, I'll take the one in the turban.
But wasn't it good when Gene Wilder actually did that line?
Wasn't it great?
Last week.
Better than it was when I did it. But it's the effect slightly spoiled by the fact that he pointed out that he had written the entire script except for that line.
And number 3, Bridge to Terabithia.
Can I just say that what he just said was exactly what I was about to say? I was literally on the cusp of saying it, but then he came in and that was it.
At number 3, Bridge to Terabithia.
Well, I had a problem because it's a film, it's a kid's film in which in the middle of it something really tragic happens, and I reviewed it saying I wish that the tragic thing hadn't happened. I think it kind of spoiled the film. And I got a very irate letter from somebody that said, you know, that's nonsense. The tragic thing really has to happen for it to work. The only problem is my kids really hated that really tragic bit, which I think is Q and, if you will, ED.
Right, okay, that was it. An interesting insight into the way your mind
works. No, because
works.
The point is, it's right, it is a kids' movie, and I think there are certain rules within kids' movie, and I think you have to earn the right in kids' movies to do this particularly tragic thing, and without giving it away, I would refer you to the scene in My Girl, which involves the bees and Macaulay Culkin.
At number two, 28 weeks later.
I mean, it's only a shame it's not number one. It's great. It's the sequel to 28 Days Later. Juan Carlos Fresnadillo, the Spanish director, brings political subtext right to the fore. It's obviously rampaging. They're not zombies. Rampaging non-zombies running around very much in a post-Iraq style. And I think it's great. It's only a shame that it's not number one, because once again, the number one spot has been held by...
But I was just saying, interesting that an 18 certificate movie can get that high. So the certificate, not much to do with...
No, it is clearly...
The fact that this is England's...
No, but this is England. It's a very different kettle of fish.
I mean, Spider-Man 3, of course, is the answer.
Yeah, but I mean, if Spider-Man 3 had been given, you know, a triple X rating, it would still be at number one. Nobody cares. It's that thing. I mean, Spider-Man 3 is a 12 certificate movie. I think it's still in the upper echelons of the 12, but it's the problem is it's just incredibly boring and all over the place. And you sat next to me and watched it, and you thought it was really dull, and then you pretended afterwards that you thought it was more interesting than you did.
No, I did not think it was really
dull.
You were
stretching, and you were, like, creaking your back, and you were yawning and cracking your fingers. And then I have to ask you afterwards whether you enjoyed it. You said, yeah, it was all right. No, it wasn't. It was all over the shop.
What you're saying is you would disagree with me. I found it less tedious than you.
No, what I'm saying
is... And I'm right, and you're
wrong. What I'm saying is your voice said one thing, but your body said something else.
Okay, if you tell me that's what I thought, then clearly you're right.
I sat next to you. The rest of the audience didn't.
We asked you to send in last week to send in your... reviews of 28 Weeks Later is a selection of some of the finest.
Blimey, I can't believe I'm actually agreeing with Mark Kermode. I love 28 Weeks Later.
If you're into your blood and guts, yes, go see it.
It's around the time that the Americans lose control of the containment area that I think the movie also loses it.
More action, more scares, more plot, more thrills, more body parts.
It is a very gory film, so it won't appeal to everyone.
You run, hide, kill a zombie. Run, hide, kill a zombie.
You won't believe the bloody havoc a helicopter can wreak.
They make me mad. They make me filled with rage.
Well, thank you to Anthony McCarley and Mark Lowenthal and Robert Brinkhurst and Andy Thornton, Ed Ross and John Donnelly, who you heard there. They sent us their thoughts on 28 Weeks Later. Next week, we'd like to know what you think of Pirates of the Caribbean 3. We can hardly wait at the world's end to give it its full title. No longer than 60 seconds, please, and then we'll chop
the film?
It up.
Yeah, if the film was no longer than 60 seconds, that would be a positive bonus, wouldn't it?
We'll chop up your review and do what we want with it and insert it along with loads of other thoughts, as you just heard. This is where you go to for details, bbc.co.uk/5live/entertainment/your audio. All the details will be on the website if you didn't follow all of that. bbc.co.uk/5live. Follow all the details and you may well get on the movie review section for next week's programme. So coming up then, some reviews, and we'll start with Zodiac and Love Wrecked, and we have all sorts of thoughts coming up. Black Snake Moan is an interesting movie as well. This from Andy says, would it be possible to market an action figure of the Good Doctor? It could come with the following working phrases. Sir Anthony Hopkins, the death of narrative cinema as we know it, and don't take kids to see Casino Royale. The only trouble would be the action figure itself, I think.
Yeah, which would be very disappointing. Thank you, Simon.
Daniel in Edinburgh, I was wondering if anyone else had noticed a scene in one of the trailers for Ocean's 13 in which Matt Damon appears to be alighting from an aeroplane whilst apparently in disguise but looking like the Good Doctor.
Really?
Also, a bit worried about Mark's form of late. Personally, having thoroughly enjoyed A Bridge to Terabithia, which was perhaps a little rushed but deserved its twist, and also having been disappointed by 28 Weeks Later, which at times was almost farcical. At least he's reliably entertaining with his reviews. Ashley, let me just give you a microphone. You really liked this, Ashley Giles. You really liked Bridge to Terabithia.
Yeah, I thought it was a great film. I almost cried, actually.
There you go.
No, well, listen, I have to say I'm very happy to be proven wrong about Bridge to Terabithia, because I do think that one of the things that children's entertainment ought to be is that it ought to be adventurous and it ought to attempt to do more stuff than it usually does. My problem is that I think, and I mean, I mean, because your kids are how old?
My kids are 5 and 7. I just felt it taught them that we, you know, none of us are invincible and we have to take some care. We don't want them to see films about, you know, grimness and death all the time, but I thought it was a fantastic film.
I think that there is an argument for that stuff being in kids' cinema. My feeling, as I said before, is I didn't think the film had earned the right to go that far. That said, I'm encouraged to hear that other kids don't think that. And I have, like I said, a couple of people have said to me that they did enjoy it, but I've had a bunch of people say to me, I did take my kids to it, and they were completely wigged out.
When you say happy to be proven wrong,
yes.
How will that be proved then?
Well, you know, as the good gentleman has just said, he took his intelligent children to see it, and they were totally up to the challenge.
So you might be wrong then on this.
I am wrong, clearly. Thanks. Well, at least there's a room for debate.
Thanks, Ashley. Nice one.
I'm right, thank you.
Yeah, and there we go. I'm ready to stand down whenever that's the case. When was the last time that happened? I think it was 1973, wasn't it?
Ellie says, Sam, listening every day here in Vancouver. I get up at 7 a.m. Please ask Mark to say hi to me as well as Jason Isaacs. He's not the only one who listens whilst living abroad.
Oh, and hello to
David Morrissey. Jason Isaacs, and now Ellie Sewell added to that list. So, amongst the big new movies coming out, Zodiac seems to take most of the posters.
Well, Zodiac, which opens in the UK today, of course, is up for the Palme d'Or in the Cannes Film Festival, which I'm flying off to after this, and I can already feel
you
my soul sinking
into it.
Because
like
it's my job.
Well,
it's my job. It's what I have to do. Anyway, complain, complain, moan, moan, whinge, whinge. There we go. Okay, factually inspired movie based on the reign of a serial killer whose reign of terror lasted from the late 60s to the early 1990s, rose to public infamy because very soon after his first crime, he started sending coded letters to newspapers, including the San Francisco Chronicle, warning in code of his forthcoming attacks. Here's a clip.
Is this Vallejo story true? Do we know that?
Paul?
What? I cover crime in Vallejo?
Yeah, I cover crime in Vallejo. Let's shoot the code and call SFPD. If it turns out to be real, at least you'll have the material.
BPD, they confirmed the shootings.
Al's on the phone with the Examiner. They got the same letter with a different code.
Sort of the Times Herald. Christmas, two teenagers on Lover's Lane, both the OA, David Faraday and Betty Jensen. July 4th, Darlene Farron and Michael I think it's Mayhew. Anyway, he lived. She didn't.
The murder weapons?
Ballistics. Everything he said in the letters match. I mean, I think the Times Herald's going to go with it.
The Examiner's going, but won't go front page. I say let's go front page. If he kills 12 people, it's not our fault.
So what you basically have, David Fincher, who's the director, is the guy who directed Seven, which of course is the classic serial killer movie. And you find out who the serial killer is very, very early on. The serial killer's modus operandi all fits in with, you know, the method in his madness. You know it's the Kevin Spacey character, and that's fine. What you have here is the antithesis of that. You have a serial killer movie without a serial killer at the centre of it, because famously the Zodiac case remains unsolved. I mean, the police have favourite suspects, as do all the people that investigated the case, people who wrote books about it, and none more so than the Jake Gyllenhaal character, Robert Graysmith, upon whose book this is based. But at the end of the day, nobody is absolutely certain who the Zodiac is. So, in the absence of the killer, what you get is a movie which concentrates on all the people surrounding the thing. So you get, on the one hand, as I said, Jake Gyllenhaal playing Robert Graysmith. You get Robert Downey Jr., who you heard that in that clip, playing Paul Avery, the reporter. You get Mark Ruffalo as the detective who's leading the case. And it's about the way in which the Zodiac case affects their life. And they all become obsessed with discovering who the Zodiac is, often to the detriment of their jobs and their personal life. And it follows that case through this two decades. Now, I think that in itself is a fairly adventurous thing to do, because I think everyone is fairly sick of serial killer movies which concentrate on the central serial killer being this interesting character and, you know, being this sort of enigma. Here there is a very, very deliberate absence. Very early on in the movie, you have a couple of murder scenes which I have to say I felt very uncomfortable with, because obviously this is based on, you know, things which really happened. But very early on, those murder scenes fall by the way, and you stop seeing any of that stuff, and what you see is simply the characters who are caught up in this whole thing and the way in which they react. Now, Robert Downey Jr. for me is always a problem, because Robert Downey Jr. does all his performances like Robert Downey Jr. And he does, and it's the Robert Downey Jr. mumble. So on the one hand, you have Jake Gyllenhaal doing a convincing performance as Graysmith, you have Mark Ruffalo doing a convincing performance as a cop, but you have Robert Downey Jr. playing Robert Downey Jr. And that is all that Robert Downey Jr. does nowadays. And sometimes it works. And in this case, I kind of thought it was slightly out of the way. But what Fincher manages to do, by putting aside the tricks that he used, the visual tricks for Seven and the visual tricks he used for Fight Club and to some extent for Panic Room, and making a movie which looks a lot straighter but is actually every bit as stylized and every bit as stylish as his previous films, makes a really, really engrossing sociological thrill. I mean, the thing it's closest to is that Spike Lee movie that again caused a little bit of controversy. Remember The Summer of Sam, which was not about Son of Sam. It was about all the people involved, you know, in the area around around those killings, but it isn't centrally about that crime. So I think it's ambitious. I think it's got, I mean, it's a long film. It's the best part of 2.5 hours long, but you don't ever feel it drags. It clearly uses CGI for some of its sequences, but you never think, oh, I'm aware of watching a special effects scene. I mean, there's one scene in which the camera follows a cab all the way through the streets of San Francisco. There's another sequence in which the camera sits atop the Golden Gate Bridge, and it's really visually astonishing, but you're not sitting there thinking, this is clearly a CGI scene. There's also a very interesting pop soundtrack, and to go through the periods, he uses the pop music of the periods, and it pretty much does for the Hurdy-Gurdy Man what Reservoir Dogs did for Stuck in the Middle with You. Right. I mean, you know, you're never going to listen to Hurdy-Gurdy Man again and think, oh, what a lovely...
That's Donovan, then.
It is, yeah, yes. But it's a pretty creepy song, even at the best of times. I mean, I know you may be a Donovan fan.
Well, not particularly.
No, exactly. Well,
I hear what you mean by it. I never thought of it as creepy, but I can
it
imagine.
Is creepy. Oh, it's really creepy. It's a very, very strange thing. And there's also that thing in Silence of the Lambs, which is now impossible to listen to Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers playing American Girl without thinking of that sequence from Silence of the Lambs. This does for Hurdy-Gurdy Man what them did for... I mean, I think it's a very impressive piece of work. It's interesting to see that it's up for the Palme d'Or because, as Fincher himself has said, it's not the kind of arty fare that the French normally, you know, normally like. But it's up against Quentin Tarantino's Grindhouse, which I'm trying to go into with an open mind. But I think
No,
listen, you're going to be proven wrong. You're going to find out that actually when I review it, I'm going to be staggeringly open-minded about it. The fact that I'm already fed up with the publicity campaign for it is neither here nor there.
There's a good Steve Hillage version of Hurdy-Gurdy Man, apparently, which if you're fed up with the song, you try that one. Anyway.
I once saw Steve Hillage supporting Queen at Hyde Park, and he was the most boring act I've ever seen in my whole life.
Sarah on this email, is Mark looking forward to attending the world premiere of Michael Moore's new film at the Cannes Festival? Michael is telling anyone who'll listen... Mm. Mm-hmm. He's had to make a secret copy of this one in case the US government tried to confiscate it.
Yeah, right. And, you know, he was so censored the last time when Fahrenheit 9/11 was censored so much that you couldn't turn on a television set without hearing Michael Moore telling everybody how censored he was and blathering up and down the Croisette talking about his right to freedom of speech, which he seemed to be expressing in every possible opportunity. Yes, I am looking forward to the new Michael Moore movie with the usual open mind that I bring to bear on these things.
Okay, so we've done Zodiac. Also out this week, Black Snake Moan.
The latest from director Craig Brewer, who is a guy who made Hustle and Flow, which, if you remember, was the movie that told us that it's hard out there for a pimp, which, of course, most of us feel really bad about. Yeah, God, it's really hard being a pimp. Wow, tough break, huh? You know,
try not being one.
I'm sorry, I don't care. In fact, you know what? I'm rather pleased. If it's hard out there for a pimp, then the world is not entirely bad. Now, his new movie, which tells us that it's hard out there for a man who tries to cure a tearaway woman of her nymphomania by chaining her to a radiator. Tough break again.
Yeah, how tough can it get?
Here's a clip.
You're going to have to get on. Can't have nobody around my place.
You get a call from Rose?
They ain't got nothing to do with that woman. I just don't want to be bothered with nobody right now.
Something wrong with your phone? I've been trying to call you for a few days. Going dove hunting?
R.L., now I done told you to get on. I ain't playing.
You saying that gun is for me if I don't?
I ain't letting you talk me out of no more, R.L., now I done made up my mind on this. I ain't gonna be moved.
Ain't gonna be moved.
Ain't no room for preaching around here no more. Now I done told you to get on.
Or what?
Go on now!
That, of course, Samuel L. Jackson, right, who is the one note of credibility in the story. So the story is basically Christina Ricci is this tearaway piece of white trash who is completely overrun by mania and specifically nymphomania. At the beginning of the film, she gets dumped in a roadside. Samuel Jackson, whose wife has left him, finds her and discovers that what she really needs is to be cured of her wrongdoing. And the way he cures of her wrongdoing is literally he chains her to the radiator and keeps her in his house until she decides that she's not going to do no wrong no more. And occasionally he goes and plays a little bit of blues guitar, which I can't quite figure out whether he's playing it himself in the movie. So the director, Craig Brewer, says, and I'm quoting, he says, Black Snake Moan is really about two very different people coming together to heal each other, you know, which is a little bit like saying that, you know, Deep Throat is a lovely comedy about self-fulfillment, which may be true on one level, but is frankly not the point. And if you've seen the poster for Black Snake Moan, which is Christina Ricci, you know, shackled.
Yes,
and Samuel L. Jackson. It's one of those... for some reason, Grindhouse has become the new art house. I mean, clearly I missed a meeting because all those sleazy 70s exploitation movies are right back and everyone's trying to make every film they look like a sleazy exploitation movie. So this is what you've got. You've got the kind of movie that you're not allowed to make since everybody decided that Mandingo is really not acceptable anymore and we can't have this kind of stuff. Now, it's not entirely without interest. Christina Ricci's performance is absolutely bonkers to the max. I mean, she spends the whole movie running around virtually unclad, chained to radiators, screaming, shouting, hollering, and, you know, generally turning it up to 11, to not much effect, I have to say. Samuel Jackson, on the other hand, who is a very watchable actor, sort of gives it credibility. There are moments when you think, well, I kind of believe in Samuel L. Jackson. I kind of believe in his, you know, redemptive character. And then you think, no, I'm sorry, I'm not buying them. What happens is the movie itself is way too long. It may have worked if they brought it in at around 82 minutes. And it actually, I mean, one of the things that people forget about all the grindhouse, you know, sleazy films that we're now referring to is that they were all short. People didn't make long
How
grindhouse movies.
How do you define
movies.
Grindhouse?
Well, grindhouse officially, before Quentin Tarantino hijacked the term, was used to describe a form of movies which were distributed through what used to be referred to as grindhouse theatres. You grind them out. Literally, it was theatres like in 42nd Street, in Times Square, the drive-in market to some extent played in this. And these were production line schlock, sexploitation, violence, gore, that sort of stuff. I mean, that's what grindhouse originally meant. But of course, what's happened is that Quentin Tarantino has now completely usurped that tone. So now whenever anyone says grindhouse, everyone now thinks about, you know, oh, it's art house, it's ironic, it's knowing, it's all those things, which of course grindhouse never was. But crucially, grindhouse movies were short, because you had to get two of them on a double bill, and the double bill had to be turned around every 3 hours, otherwise the grindhouse market didn't make any money out of it. And all these people who were referring back to that market could do well to remember that brevity, you know, was a virtue.
It must be very disconcerting for Christina Ricci then, that you say she spends most of the movie taking her clothes off, running around, shouting, getting chained to a radiator, and
yes,
then you say, without achieving a whole lot.
Well,
it must be a little bit disconcerting.
I mean, basically,
if you're going to do all that stuff, you hope to achieve something.
I think she is doing what has been required of her by the script and by the director. The problem is that any credibility and credence in the movie lies in Sam Jackson's role. But, as I said, you sit there and you think, okay, yeah, no, hang about a minute. I mean, it is the most deliberately write-off movie I've seen in a very long time. And the problem is, at the length that it is, you just keep stopping and stepping back. I'm sorry, I'm not. This is about a guy chaining somebody to a radiator in order to make their life better. No, no, and thrice no. That doesn't mean to say that it is without interest. I mean, I think it's more interesting than Hustle and Flow, which I just thought was incredibly annoying. But it is balderdash.
What else is new?
Also out this week, Magicians, which is the new movie from... Now, you know Peep Show, right?
Because Mitchell and Webb were on the programme yesterday.
Really? How were they?
Dave Mitchell and Robert, they were very nice.
What did they tell you about Magicians?
Well, I've seen Magicians.
You've seen it?
I've seen it, yes.
Okay.
It's 90 minutes.
Would you like to do it? It's 90 minutes long, that's right. What's it like? What's it about?
What's it like?
It's about 90 minutes. Do you want to do the setup or shall I do it? You go ahead.
Mate,
go on.
It's your gig.
No, go on. You do it.
I think there are some funny bits. It's not as good as Peep Show.
Okay, that's not a plot setup, so I'll do the plot setup. Mitchell and Webb play two magicians who at the beginning... Watch this. Watch the master at bay.
I'm in awe.
At the beginning are involved in a ménage à trois with their glamorous assistant. One of them is married to the glamorous assistant. The
yes.
other one is having an affair with the glamorous
yes.
assistant, which sadly leads to a tragic on-stage accident, including the loss of someone's head. Later on, they find themselves trying to break back into the magic market, but on their own. And very much as with the case with Blades of Glory, they can't do it on their own. Here's a clip.
What should I do for the second round? Mr. Potato Head? That's always pretty amazing.
Yes! Or do your Potato Head, but you do it Blaine style-y. Up a tree.
Up a tree?
Not up a tree. In a pond!
In a pond?
Not in a pond! Buried up to your neck in the sand.
No, I don't like that.
I will webcast it. Daisy will freak. There'll be a huge buzz. German housewives logging on. Here's the pitch. You don't need food. You are living off your brain.
And that's one of the funnier moments from the film. Now, I'm going to defer to you on this, okay? I've never seen Peep Show. I hear that Peep Show is very funny.
It is
it?
Yeah.
Okay,
it is, yeah.
Fine. Have you seen those computer adverts with them in it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think they're very funny as well.
Okay, fine. So, are they the same kind of funny as Peep Show?
What, the ads?
Yeah.
Well, it's a different kind of funny, but they're still the same character, because you look at David Mitchell and you immediately associate him with the character in Peep Show, and the same with Robert Webb.
Okay, great, because I've got to tell you, having not seen Peep Show, on the strength of this, which is described as coming from the makers of Peep Show,
I have
no inclination to see Peep Show at all, which is a shame, because people who I respect, and you,
thanks,
keep telling me that actually Peep Show is very funny. This is very, very not funny. I know it's not.
It's very, very not funny.
Not funny.
Is that grammar?
It is grammar, yes. It's
very, very not funny.
Very, very not funny.
Very, very unfunny would have been.
Very, very unfunny.
I think
it's fine. So I can say very, very not funny.
The observer would have put a line through that.
Very, very unfunny.
Carry
so
on.
I know it's not a direct adaptation of the TV show. I know that this is a thing in its own right. But boy, does it look like a direct adaptation of a TV show. It looks like an idea which, at 30 minutes, would have completely run its course. Sadly, it's 90 minutes long. 90 minutes is actually a 4-star running time, frankly, but it is a good hour too long. The story is that in order to get back into the magic market, they both enter a competition, and I'm being passed a, is that grammar is grammatically incorrect? Thank you very much. Your editor has just passed me a thing which says, is that grammar is itself grammatically incorrect? That's 15 love.
I
know it's cricket, isn't it? Was that 1-0 in cricket? What is it?
Just
have I scored a try?
Just
or is
get
it
on with
a conversion? So what you have is something that's flailing around for a good hour of its running time. The competition is, it's obvious that in the end the two people have got to get back together again in order for them, you know, to achieve some kind of fruition to their magic. But it's just not funny enough. And you sit there thinking, okay, I understand the competition is simply a device to allow a bunch of, you know, important British comedians to be funny. But when the important British comedians aren't funny, what you're left with is the plot.
Very, very not funny.
Very, very not funny. And the plot is very, very not interesting. So very, very not funny, very, very not interesting, and very, very, very not inspiring on the I won't go off and watch Peep Show because if it's anything like this, I'm going to fall asleep. Now, as I said, I think that, what are they called? Ant and Dec.
Mitchell and Webb.
Are individually probably very nice and very funny. And in fact, I've heard one of them, either Ant or Dec, introducing a comedy show on Radio 4. And very witty he was too.
David Mitchell.
But the movie's a stinker.
Very, very a stinker.
Very, very a stinker. Is there, you could take lessons in grammar from you.
Is there anything else that's very, very so new?
Well, also out this week, we did mention...
Speakers, I'm in Friends.
Are you? Very good. I don't even know what that sentence meant. Joe Strummer, The Future is Unwritten. There is a debate, incidentally, about whether this film is called The Future is Unwritten, Joe Strummer, or Joe Strummer, The Future is Unwritten. I think
it's not an interesting debate, though, is it, that?
Okay, well, it's the new documentary by Julian Temple. No, you can't look it up, because on the IMDb it says Joe Strummer, The Future is Unwritten, but the distributors insist that the film is called The Future is Unwritten, Joe Strummer. Thank you, that's why I brought it up, but don't, you know, don't worry about it.
It's a Joe Strummer movie.
It's a Joe Strummer movie. It's a fantastic documentary by Julian Temple, and I think it's a really, really good piece of work. Julian Temple kind of blotted his copybook very early on with The Great Rock and Roll Swindler, which I thought was a very poor film. He then went on to make Absolute Beginners, which was also a very poor film, but since then, he's really redeemed himself with fantastic stuff like The Filth and the Fury, which is a great documentary about the Pistols, and now Joe Strummer, The Future is Unwritten, which basically gets together loads and loads of people who knew Strummer over his life, interviews them all around campfires, because towards the end of his life, Strummer became very, very, you know, festival orientated. In fact, funnily enough, one of the things that the documentary really says is that he was an old hippie, despite the fact that he was, you know, known as the great godfather of punk rock. He was at heart an old hippie. I think the most interesting thing about the film is, if you know nothing about The Clash, you come away from it thinking that this was a really, really interesting guy who was so many different things to different people. On the one hand, he was a public school kid. On the other hand, he was a kind of you know, folky who called himself Woody for a while and lived in a squat around the 101ers. Then he became Joe Strummer of The Clash. Then later on, he became the guy from the Mescaleros. And another period in his life, he was somebody who did soundtracks for interesting independent films. And at no point did I find any of this boring, despite the fact that it's over 2 hours long. One thing which is quite funny is one sort of slightly elderly film critic who I respect very much said to me afterwards, I really didn't like the fact that none of these people were identified, and I didn't know who they were. And part of me felt like, well, you know, hey, daddy-o, you know, if you're not hip to the groove, that's your problem. And another part of me thought, well, you know, maybe it's an acceptable criticism, but you know what? Even at the age of 43, I felt, yeah, you've got to be young to understand this.
It's very, very so too late. We have to go, movie of the week.
Well, Zodiac.
And don't forget the vodcast, in which you can see all last week's reviewed movies with pictures.
I don't think vodcast is grammatically correct either.
It's a video
either.
Podcast. Apparently it's called a vodcast. You go to the BBC website and find all the details and follow it from there. Mark, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks for your listener reviews. This week we'd like you to knock together a review of the new release Zodiac. Keep your reviews under 60 seconds, please.